Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capital Party Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm well. In fact, you know, but I want to talk about a restaurant experience that I had just the other night.
Okay.
Chose a restaurant in Hoboken.
Mm-hmm.
Hoboken, New Jersey's little town just outside of New York City. And we were meeting some friends from dinner. My fiance and I were meeting some friends for dinner. And we made the wrong choice. Not in friends. The friends were fine.
Uh-huh.
We went to dinner, and it was a fine time. But we walked in, and there's a bar, and then there's a back room. There's a restaurant, which is sort of an arrangement that I kind of like.
Mm-hmm.
And the food aside, the food wasn't great, but the food aside, the problem for me was we got there and there were TVs everywhere and there was a trivia contest going on. Now, it was 80s trivia, so I happened to know a lot of the answers. So it wasn't that I was annoyed because I wasn't doing well.
Boy George. Cindy
Lauper.
The Eurythmics.
Leggings. So we went in and we weren't really participating, but it was, I can't argue with this. It was successful. A lot of the other bars on the street and restaurants on the street were quiet, and it was successful. But they had a DJ playing very loud music that you could hear in the dining room.
Mm-hmm.
And then the DJ music would get a little bit quieter but still play while the DJ asked the trivia questions rather loudly. And there was it was just so obtrusive that we said, oh, you know what, let's just go to sit at the table. And we went and sat at the table, and it's piped into the back room as well.
Oh, the trivia contest.
Well, and the music. But forget the trivia contest. That was just insult to injury. But this I'm seeing more and more places that play very loud music during dinner, like at where you would sit and have dinner. Now, very, very loud music in a bar, I get that. I would never favor those bars anyway. But the idea of extremely loud music that literally we were sitting at a table, four of us, and we're leaning into the table and yelling at each other.
Well, you know what the problem is?
What?
You're old.
No. But the people I was with were not. No, and I'm not saying it was fine. It didn't ruin.
You know what? It is a reflection of our society. And I'm going to tell you that I'm certain that there were people in the restaurant that you were in that simply just texted each other while they were sitting across the table from one another. You can't hear each other, so I'll send you a text message.
But
I've seen in my restaurant, there's a conversation going on in the restaurant, and somebody is texting somebody a side joke to somebody else at the table. I've seen it happen in my restaurant, and I'm like, could you be any more rude?
It's whispering to the nth degree.
It's beyond whispering.
Didn't your mother tell you you're not allowed to whisper?
Didn't your mom teach you that that's rude?
Not allowed to whisper?
Because it is.
Well, but I think that it's, and because I'm trying to figure it out, because I look at the block, and there were several bars on that block, and the other bars were empty, and this bar was full, and it was jamming loud, right? And I'm not talking about a bar. I'm talking about sitting down to have dinner.
Right.
I wonder if it's, you know, which would lead me to believe that if they turned off the music and did the same thing that the other bars did, that some people would just get up and leave. So I wonder what it is that, is it an insecurity that makes us seek out a place where it's so loud that we feel like there's something going on?
You mean they're trying to create a buzz?
That's what they're trying to do, but why why does anyone put up with it, you know?
I don't enjoy it. I mean, I think that there is a generation now, and we have a generation of 20-somethings, and if you're 20-something, I'm not making fun of you, but there's a generation now of people who don't talk in person anymore, who don't even we've now even replaced our cell phone conversations with the typewritten message. And We don't go out to dinner and sit and talk around a dinner table anymore. We go out to dinner and the music is piped in and we eat our food.
Mm.
And I think that's just a change of the generation. And I hope that there's always a pendulum.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that the pendulum is ready to swing back the other way.
But I wonder if it swings to, if the music is playing so loudly that you need to yell. Raise your voice, not yell. Mm-hmm. I'm exaggerating a little, but certainly lean in and raise your voice. And there was certainly a number of during the evening of the. What was that? What did you say? Is it that you don't have to be as intelligent in your conversation? Is it that the playing field of of intelligent conversation is leveled if you're yelling at each other? Mm-hmm. I really don't get it. On the converse, I went to another place last night. I went to a place in Manhattan that I have been meaning to go to. I can't believe I haven't been, but it's one of the best bars for spirits in all of New York City. It's a place called the Brandy Library. And the Brandy Sommelier Beverage Director, the guy who puts the collection of spirits together, is a guy named Ethan Kelly. And I'd met Ethan at a cocktail bar almost a year ago now. And we've had a number of really lively and interesting conversations, so I finally went to Ethan's joint. And what a spectacular place. Leather chairs, it's fairly quiet, there's a fireplace, nice long bar, and every spirit you could possibly want.
You really do love a fireplace, too,
don't you? I do, actually. That's one of the things I don't like about the summer. All right, that's a little extreme. But no, that was, and you can find it online, the Brandy Library in New York City. I think it's on North Moore Street, downtown. And I happened to be with a friend of mine who's an Austrian wine writer, and an Austrian spirits producer, a producer of, Austrian eau de vie or schnapps. And we went in and sat at this place. And, Peter Schleimer and Hans Reisebauer, the spirits producer, and I have been to a lot of really nice places around the world for spirits. And this is just world class, the ultimate in civilization.
You're a big fan of civility too. Oh, so
huge.
Fireplaces, civility, big comfy chairs, brandy.
Huge.
It's basically the perfect place for you.
Yeah, I'm all in. And you know what? No trivia contest.
You know, I just have to give a plug for a friend of mine has just opened a restaurant in Hoboken, and it's the place you should have gone to.
I know, I can't believe I forgot when I was there.
In Hoboken, it just recently opened a place called the Hudson Tavern on Hudson Street in Hoboken. There's a parking lot right across the street. I think it's like Hudson and 14th or so. And I went there with an old college friend of mine, about 25 college buddies went there for an evening about a week ago. And it's just a really nice place. A bar, definitely a bar-centric kind of place. It's Hoboken. But like you said, there's a private dining room in the back. Except in this case, the dining room in the back was actually a dining room. So you weren't in the bar. I mean, you could sit at a table in the bar room if you wanted to, and where the bar was the focus of the room. Or you could sit in kind of this little back room. And it was very nice. We had great conversation. And it's loud. I mean, it's Hoboken. It was... it was a louder type place, but it was a place where we had very civilized conversation. The food was pretty good, and they really did a good job. So kudos to Bubba, who's opened the Hudson Tavern, old college friend of mine in Francis's.
Well, we're gonna talk after the break with an old friend, Rob Ilvento. Rob started the Cluck U Chicken franchise. The first one was started right here at Rutgers University when Mark and I were in college. Many an evening wound up at Cluck U Chicken, and we'll talk with him in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Today we're talking with an old friend, Rob Ilvento. Rob started the Cluck U Chicken franchise. The first one was started right here at Rutgers University when Mark and I were in college. Many an evening wound up at Cluck U Chicken, and Rob's here today to talk to us about it.
Hey, Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Hey, Mark. How are you?
So I have to tell our listeners a little story about my beginning time at Rutgers University. My very first semester here at Rutgers, I was in a freshman economics class, and Rob was in the class with me, and then we had another class together the next semester, and then all of a sudden I kind of lost touch with Rob for a little while, and lo and behold, about 6 months later, the first Cluck U Chicken had erupted, and everybody was checking out this new place. I went to check it out. There was Rob standing behind the counter. I'm like, Rob, you work here? He's like, no, I opened the place. And so basically, Rob, you decided that my economics degree was a bunch of bunk, and that you should go and just that you could do it, that you could do it without necessarily finishing college, and you could go your own route, and you started this epic franchise.
Well, Mark's being humble. Mark was the first Clucker Cup wing-eating champion.
You know, I was hoping we wouldn't go down that road.
I think it was 48 or 53. But, yeah, we shared a few classes, and thank God, Cluck, you survived on Eastern Avenue in those early years. And it was fun. I think Mark also was, I think, one of the first chefs at Clucker Chicken as well. So he's come a long way.
By the way, I'd like to...
fast food to fine dining, I would say kudos to him.
I knew some of my old... skeletons were going to come out of the closet during this show. But what I like to say about eating that many chicken wings in a five-minute period is the only thing worse, and in, I guess, the second semester you were open, I came in and I broke the Cluck U chicken wing eating contest record. I ate, it's true statement. Rob tells the truth. I ate 53 chicken wings in 5 minutes.
Yes, the previous record was 48. He destroyed it.
And what I like to say to people who ask me about breaking that record and how I felt afterwards, I said, you know, there's only one time in my life that I felt worse than eating 53 chicken wings in 5 minutes and breaking the record. And that was when I ate 46 chicken wings in 5 minutes and didn't break the record.
So
that's a good one. I can remember that one, too.
So, Rob, I got to ask you a question. Where does the record stand today?
I think it's held by a boy down at the Red Bank store. I think he's up to 72 wings. I think the stomach got a little bigger over the last 20 years, like everything else in America. So I think it's up to 72 wings, believe it or not.
I got
to
tell you, and true story again, you know, a plaque with my picture on it was on the wall of the first Cluck U chicken way back when.
Yes, it was.
And the following year, one of my first and probably my only cooking job, Rob ran the kitchen at Old Queen's Tavern here in New Brunswick. And I was a short order cook for Rob one summer in the kitchen of Cluck U Chicken. So we go way back, Rob and me.
All right. So we talk about how many wings one can eat in a moment. Let's talk about some different numbers. What's interesting is now you've taken that. How many Cluck U stores are there now?
We're up to 42 locations. You know, full service stores similar to franchising, and then we branched off. I guess about 6 or 7 years ago. We're doing a lot of branding, meaning pizzerias now carry our line of frozen wings, frozen tenders, and gallon sauces to carry that Cluck U experience, you know, to more locations. But we do about 4 locations a year and probably 50 to 100 new branded locations every year.
And the pizzeria seems such a natural fit for the chicken wing. You know, it's basically the same events that you're having, chicken wings and pizza. You know.
Yeah, and now with the cost of real estate in the marketplace, a lot of times the corner that you want has a Luigi's Pizza there. So we partner with, you know, good operators and good towns, and they see the value of serving, you know, a value-added product, and all of a sudden they become a destination for chicken wings instead of having chicken wings as a menu item.
Now, let me ask you a question. When you, because I'm really fascinated by this, because you're on another end and very successful in a different end of the business than Mark and I operate in, and I'm really fascinated by it. When you partner with someone who's going to carry your wings, a full-service restaurant that's going to carry your branded product.
Right.
Do you get involved with how they have to do it? I mean, if they don't do a good job with it, can they lose it?
Yeah, we always got to monitor the brand, and that's the risk we you know that we run. You know, they sign a simple agreement that they use our point of sale. They have to use our product. Number one, they can't put the Tyson tender. Most of the times, you can tell the difference, but we got to be consistent. You know, brand location to brand location. They sign a simple agreement that if they're hanging a thermometer or a sign and people see Cluck U to the public, they have to use the full product line. That being said, we also have people that just enjoy using one of the sauces, say, open-coated, right? They like the atomic sauce, and they just want one sauce. They use that without the Cluck U brand to the public.
So basically they're using your sauces,
yeah,
they're using your product.
Yeah, similar as a pick and shovel more so than a brand, just because they enjoy the flavor profile, but they don't want to get into 5 or 6 or 7 sauces. If you're a full-branded account, you would carry the mild and the atomic and the nuclear and the thermonuclear to really become that destination in your local town for the best wings And that's done in, you know, their next order from Roma Foods. You have the best wings in town. That's
well, we need to talk about all the different sauces and how you can really punish people when
we'll,
we come back.
We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis from Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi talking to a fellow restaurateur, an old friend, Rob Ilvento of Cluck U Chicken.
So, Rob, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, I think sometimes people look at somebody like you who was a startup. You were a startup, small business owner, very much like the mom-and-pop restaurant owners of today. Now you've expanded to 35 stores or 40 stores or whatever crazy amount of Cluck U chickens there are out in the world right now. But I think when people look at a store like that, they think, frying chicken, it's pretty simple thing. Anybody can do it. But you're really a businessman. I mean, you're really a very savvy businessman. Can you talk a little bit about how that comes into play?
Well, I think 20 years of experience, I like to say knowledge before experience makes for better experience. So that being said, sometimes when you don't know, you shouldn't be able to do things. You start off similar like what you did, and you evolve. You learn, and hopefully if you're brutally honest with the outcomes, you're constantly tweaking the concept to make it better. And I think that's how things evolve from the dream of opening up one location to the dream of opening up multiple franchises to the dream of saying we can do this faster with a branded model compared to a franchise model. So, again, as you're in it, you learn it a little more. And I think if you do something long enough by getting beat up a little bit, as they say, you just keep persevering and moving forward.
Well, my advice to most people who are 26 years old is don't open a fine dining restaurant. Do you offer the same advice to 20-year-old college kids who are thinking about opening chicken places?
Well, I don't open it, but make sure they're fully disclosed on the hours involved. And I think that's, you know, the biggest thing is the physicality of food service. And I think people realize, yeah, it's not hard to make a pizza, but it may be hard to make 400 pizzas, right? And I think that's what gets lost a lot of times. You know, Cluck U, which is Cluck University, was open till 4 in the morning. And then you had to clean up, and then you had to open up at 11 o'clock. So basically, it was funny in the early days. I used to just ask the distributor, what day is it? Because after a while, with 7 days, you didn't know. You really lost track because it didn't make a difference. It was like working in a coal mine. You didn't know what day it was. If the sun was out, it didn't make a difference because you had a workload in front of you that you couldn't stop, right?
Amazing.
You wouldn't be prepped. So I think food is great. It's a great business. But the physicality of it, you know, I say it's a young man's game. Own real estate if you can. And keep it simple, if possible, even if it's fine dining.
My advice to you is inherit. But if you can't do that, we'll talk more with Rob Ilvento after the news. You're listening to Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today we're speaking with Rob Ilvento, founder of Cluck U Chicken, which now has a bunch of franchises, and you've had over 300 million chicken wings served. And should have gone into that into the business rather than this fine dining stuff. Mark and I were just saying over the news. So, Rob, when did it change for you? You talked about opening up your own business, and the reality of food service and beverage service is the physicality of it. You know, you're not sitting at a desk. You are sitting at a desk for a little bit of the time, but you're spending 18 hours a day working. When did it, and Mark and I did the same thing on the fine dining end when we first opened, when did it change and become a somewhat more civilized job?
Well, I think once you decide to franchise, you know, the first book you read is probably Behind the Arches by Ray Kroc, the McDonald's story, but the point is you needed systems and consistency as much as you can. It's so hard being consistent, you know, order to order, let alone unit to unit, and you know, the way everybody has to understand the philosophy that we all do it this way until we change it, even if it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess at that point you start organizing things a little differently where you say, well, how can I duplicate this? And then you realize, well, maybe the system is Rob, you're 24 hours a day. There's not a system. And then you start realizing what items that you could, you know, structure. And now we're working on, say, online learning where every little task will be broken down into a little film, and then they can learn it and check off, and they learned how to, you know, change a garbage bag. Okay, we all do it this way. We learned how to cut a piece of celery and so on and so forth. That being said, it's duplication, so you should be able to put it in a video file for training, number one, and that's where we're evolving on the training side. But on the unit level side, it's constantly reminding everybody all day long how they're supposed to be doing it until you have a great staff, and then basically you'll add one, you know, new employee, and hopefully to 10 or 12 well-trained employees, the system runs through them. I mean, that's really what it is, osmosis training in food service. There's really not a lot of, you know, video and data and textbooks. In the franchise world, there probably is more, but for the most of the mom and pops, they're learning from the chef and the sous chef are working side by side.
So, but when did it change for you? I think a lot of people look and say, okay, I have this great idea. I'm going to found this company in a storefront. We're going to make a great success of it. Then I'll open two or three or four, and then my life will get easier. When does your life get, and, you know, life in the food service business, even at the top of the food chain, is tough. But when did it get to be a normal job, and when was it no longer you were working 18 hours a week? A day.
Well, I guess in 2000, I sold the rights to the franchise group to a good friend of mine and one of our first drivers down in Maryland, J.P. Haddad. And that allowed me to focus on the branding and non-traditional part of the business. I still, you know, consult and help them on the restaurant side of the business. But at that point, for me personally, you know, the unit level is probably a lot more work than the branding level, just because you have a lot more people involved in putting a franchise together than you have with a manufacturer making sauces and shipping them into Rome, and Rome delivers them to the local pizzeria. So there's a lot less things that you got to be in control of. And in the franchise business, you're control from basically cradle to grave, the whole location, from site selection and training and turnover. And if the franchisee has health problems, you're finding a new person to take over the store. There's a lot more involved in running a franchise system.
How do you go about making somebody care as much as you do? That's my hardest challenge in opening my restaurant and running my restaurant is finding people who care and then showing them that they need to care even more.
Well, on our side, we always try to give them a little career path where JP was a driver, and now he's, you know, running a multi-million dollar company. So we try to give them that type of light at the end of the tunnel scenario. That being said, qualifying, you know, usually when my father told me how to hire is if they can fit in a T-shirt, they're hired, basically. And that's how I hired in the beginning. So I think questions help.
So
and interview
so
process, and, you know, you don't throw them right out to the wolves. I think training is important for retention as well.
I need to hold you
they
there.
They can learn an artwork.
I need to hold you there for Rob. So if you could fit in the T-shirt, you're hired. So then how did I get hired, man?
I think we had about the 4Xs that came in by mistake at the time.
Now, let's talk about your sauces. I mean, you know, we spend a lot of time talking to fancy chefs about how they make you know, very expensive chocolates, truffles, you know, the fine dining end. We have a lot of respect for that. That's the business that we engage in when we're not at the radio station as well. But you have some pretty cool sauces that are signature. And in your non-traditional putting them out there in the brand, how do you get them to stand out in a sea of other sauces with other companies that maybe have bigger marketing budgets and certainly larger corporate sponsors behind them or corporate advertising money behind them? How do you make your sauces stand out besides just the quality of the sauce?
Well, I think our base is always a hot and sweet blend. Mild is mild. It probably has no Scoville scale, the heat unit scale. Then you go to atomic and nuclear and thermonuclear. Basically, you slot a flavor profile. So given seven flavors, most likely you're going to find a favorite flavor for you. So I think we make it on the variety as much as we do on the flavor profiles. And I think the flavor profiles were not, you know, happenstance. We went after something and everything to us has to be wow, where you can remember it and it's a little different and it's not oversweet. A lot of the current barbecues are oversweet or even too hot.
Mm-hmm.
As much as people talk about the Cluck U911 or thermonuclear, it's the littlest part of our sales and the most part of the verbal marketing that happens, because we used to say if you can stimulate the taste buds, you can stimulate the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So people start thinking and go, wow, this is different, and all of a sudden it's a story. And if I've even heard on the YouTube, you put in the Cluck U911 challenge and you're going to get a lot of entertainment value watching these kids with a video camera, put on their sneakers, bring the milk, run down to the local Cluck U and try to eat six wings for a free T-shirt. So it's pretty funny. So those type of things are a lot of marketing on end, and that's what we try to do. How do you turn the consumer into a marketing rep? And I think that's by wowing them.
But the 911 wings basically are just for machismo, I guess. I mean, those...
No one enjoys them.
Right? Does anybody actually take pleasure from eating something that hot?
I don't think you can. I think they're...
Now, I also read that in some stores that you make people sign a waiver before they, like... Is that
a joke? Yeah, we had an incident, and believe it or not, in Tucson. We won the hottest wing in Tucson about 7 years ago. And literally the judge heard of the braggadocious wing of the 911, and I think we were the originator, even before the Dave's Insanity was a customer of ours down in Maryland years ago, and he loved the concept, and I think he has a whole, you know, maybe $1 million or $2 million business off of just the super hot oleo capsicum product, which is what it is, similar to what's used in pepper sprays,
mm-hmm.
believe it or not. It's, you know, it's something that has to be watched.
Basically,
it's not something that should be abused.
Something basically designed to make you cry.
Yeah, that's very hot, right. So the point is that, you know, they're great on the marketing end, and everybody enjoys them, and they really are an experience. Once in your life, you may want to try a 911 wing, because they really do, you know, maximize your heat tolerance for sure.
Hey, Rob, I want to be very clear about something with you and our listeners. I do not.
I'm going to pass on that one myself, Rob.
But why did they have people sign off?
We had that same judge in Tucson ended up calling 911. So we had a little medical reaction to being so hot, and then we finally toned it down, and then we called the legal 911. So we used it. We have to, be careful with that, because again, it is very hot. Very hot.
You have to be careful with the wings. Okay.
Make them sign a waiver.
Where are we going to be back in just a few minutes talking with Rob Ilvento of Cluck University Chicken? Started here in New Brunswick at Rutgers when Mark and I were in school, and now is across the country. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:45.
I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by-the-glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work. Until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years' experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 U.S. patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953. Hey everybody, welcome back to Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, talking with Rob Il Vento, founder of Cluck U Chicken.
Rob, you've done a little work with the soup man, the guy that Seinfeld made famous, or that Seinfeld called the soup Nazi. Tell us about your experience working with them and how you've kind of expanded your role as a franchisor.
Well, that's Al Yeganeh. He was the person that came from the Seinfeld fame. He has a passion for soup, similar to you and I for food. I think his soups are second to none. I was involved in doing some menu and model work for them as the first location in Princeton, New Jersey. And since then, I think they've opened about 35 or 40 locations. They do a lot of branding in non-traditional locations. They do clip-on soup in pizzerias and whatnot. And Al's a fascinating character, very particular, but I think for a reason, because the lines were long and you got to move people through, so I don't have an issue with him.
I cannot tell a lie. His soups are very, very good, and I've enjoyed them. Even you know, his franchise soups, I think are better than the canned soups you can get in a supermarket. They're more expensive, obviously, but I have to tell a quick story. We tried to get Al to come on the show. And Al, when you solicit Al to do media, Al sends you a list of rules.
Yeah.
That
what you can and cannot ask him.
What you have to send him your questions in advance, and there's if you use the word Nazi at any time in your interview, the interview automatically ends at that point.
Although I have to say that is one rule that I thought was fairly
reasonable.
I think I have
a set of those rules.
But I got the rules and I'm thinking. Okay, the Nazi thing, I could agree to that.
Right, I understand.
Because I wouldn't ever want to do
that.
Sure,
of course.
But the rules, like, you can only ask him certain things about his soup and certain things about his ingredients and certain things about his personality. I'm like, this isn't an interview. That's called a commercial. That's what that's called. You know, that's
well, it is, but he's been on Oprah and David Letterman, and, you know, he's a big deal that way on the media. And I think people should try to take advantage of him. But a funny story of Al's rules. Al's rule is know what you want, place your order, pay, move to the left. And I remember the first day in Princeton, we have a great franchisee there, the Ruddies, Lisa and Scott. And we opened up slowly. We trained the right way, and I don't believe in opening up restaurants sloppy, so we took our time. And finally, Monday came as a real day, and we thought we were ready, which we pretty much were. And then about 2 hours into lunch, Lisa turns over to me. She goes, Rob, is it ever going to stop the line?
Let's
hope not. Amazing. You had to place the order, move to the left. And I said, Al was right. If you didn't move that line, if you had people dilly-dallying, saying, what's in this soup? What's that clam soup? There's 60 soups. You're going to try to figure out the questions. The people, you have a line a mile and a half, and no one will get the soup. So he had to keep moving them. So his rule was, know what you want. If you're going to ask the question, ask it before you get to the register. Right, not when you get there. Not that he didn't want the question. He just didn't want the question asked when you got there. You're in line for a half hour. Ask the question. Right?
And
so that was funny that was the shtick. But you know what? The first day I experienced it wholeheartedly, I said, you know what? Al was right. These soups are so good. People lined up, and the storm Princeton's been rolling ever since.
And he really would ban you from soup. No soup for you was a real thing.
He's a real character. And he loves his soups, and he's very passionate. I think he has great soups, by the way, guys. That's why I helped him. I had not a lot of free time, but I love the soups and the concept of soups coming made, and that's the beautiful part. You know, soups are harder to make than anybody gives them credit to.
That's true.
Yeah.
People
make it easy. You just throw the vegetables in a pot of water. That's not soup.
Right. That's vegetables and water.
Yeah.
Tell us about your latest project. I know you got some new stuff coming on. You brought in to me not too long ago
last year we went with Cavendish Farms. We're making a French fry called Jersey Shore Fry. It's a first of its kind. It's a Belgium-style fry with sea salt. It's an old artisan recipe. that the World War II veterans taught my grandfather coming back in the early 1900s. And since we were soliciting a lot of restaurants and French fries and wings and tenders all go hand in hand, we finally decided to put that French fry in a box. And Cavendish Farms, one of the big four potato manufacturers in the country, you know, took the product on sight unseen just after seeing the test come back from R&D. And the product's been doing well received. We're in a bunch of the local diners, Princetonian Diner and All Seasons, and the new sports bar near Mastoris opened up. So we're getting into some venues that way. A bunch of the local pizzerias are carrying it. Big down at the Jersey Shore. So we got a long way to go. It's a big marketplace, but we think we have a great French fry item for, again, people that want to serve a fry that they'd be proud of, but also become a destination for fries in a local marketplace.
I have only one problem with your product, though, Rob. I need to share it with you.
Go ahead.
You call it Jersey Shore fries. Every time I go to the Jersey Shore, I get soggy, greasy fries, and I think, wow, these fries are terrible.
Well, I got a lot of work to do.
So I think your fries are good. You just need to change the name.
Right, you know what, you're probably right.
Because that whole Jersey fry experience, I think, is not what it once was.
Yeah. Well, that's what we did. We put that in a box. It's a great item, very crispy. And, again, it needs to be cooked well done. You know, potatoes should be above 350, 375 degrees.
Why is that?
I just think the caramelization. I think when you cook under, almost like a pizza, the last minute of the pizza makes that pie come out of the oven, the caramelization, the chemistry of the heat and the gluten and that golden brown has to come with a reaction. And I think a lot of times, if you pull up food, any type of food, before that reaction, it's a different item.
You know,
the
Rob,
pizza's not that good, right? You can turn that pizza,
I agree.
Raw pizza's terrible.
You're absolutely
more
right.
It turns to gold, right?
Rob, we don't have a lot of time, but something that I wanted to mention, you make fried chicken, okay? You've always been conscious about how healthy food is and how good it is for you and how it affects your body. Way back in the day when nobody else was paying attention about what kind of oil we were frying in, you were paying attention. Can you just talk about that for just a couple of seconds before we have to go to break?
Again, reading is important. And I think at that point, I read the restaurant news. I think I've been reading for 30 years. I think if you flip through the trade journals, at least they're telling you what's going to be happening. And I think we were on top of that trans fat oil in 1985, mm-hmm. I guess it was. We put little hearts on our menu, and we also skinned the fried chicken back then, too. Not that it's not an oxymoron, skinless fried chicken. But that being said, you know, we tried to stay current. And even now, I think, we're trying to progress a little bit. But we still are, you know, a fried operation, but
right.
Fried food is not as bad as people think it is. I don't think, you know, the oils don't penetrate the meat like they think they do. If you pull the skin off a fried chicken, you got a nice, well-cooked piece of white meat or dark meat there.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you're talking about no trans fat.
Yeah, and I think people can make that adjustment. They take the skin off and they got all protein. You know, mm-hmm. I try to do that low-carb diet. I fail miserably, but I try to do it. But I see myself peeling the skin off the fried chicken, taking off the breading and the skin as well.
Rob, thanks, Rob.
We're going to have to leave it there.
Pleasure, guys.
We'll see you at Cluck U one of these days. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:56. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, talking chicken today. Chicken.
One of the things we talked about with Rob Elventa, the owner of Cluck U Chicken, was, you know, back in the day, I was the Cluck U Chicken champion. I did hold the record for a number of years, for number of chicken wings eating in 5 minutes. A little bit of a dubious crown, though. I don't know if that was my finest hour, but I will tell you.
It ain't a James Beard Award.
I said earlier in the show, and I meant it. The semester before, we did it as a rush event in my fraternity. We had, you know, chicken wing eating contests and things like that. And the semester before I broke the record, I didn't break the record, and I wrote a ridiculous amount of chicken wings. And it really hurt.
And you failed.
So not getting the record and eating a ridiculous amount of chicken wings in 5 minutes, really an unpleasant experience.
Well, I think this was just an interesting show for us to go and look at another side of the business, and it's nice that we've known Rob since way back when, and he's known us since way back when, and Just fascinating and, that
and
side of the business.
That's really what happened. I mean, basically freshman year, Rob and I were friends, and Rob disappeared. And a year later, Rob had opened his first of the many Cluck U's he would want once open and said, you know what, I don't need the school thing. I know what I need to do. I need to work really hard.
Do you wish you'd chosen a different partner? Hope you've enjoyed the hour. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Shaw.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's noon.